Hello, everyone. Welcome to the One Goal US Soccer Podcast. Today, we'll be joined by Paxton Pomacall of FC Dallas, and he'll be joining us later in the show. Before we get to that, you know, I owe George an apology. So, George, why don't you tell everyone why?
Well, on our last podcast, I decided to end it with a little hypothetical game. And remember, at the time, it was purely hypothetical between the guys called in for the full national team and the guys calling for the U23s. And I said the full national team edges it. There were a little concerns about who plays in what position, but I said those guys are the experienced ones and they'll get the job done. Then we go on Twitter today and, you know, US Soccer says winning group. And who is it? It's the guys from the full national team plus George Bello. They need a left back, so they called them up. And it looks like they won an 11v11 game. So our hypothetical ended up being true. I was right, and today's a good day.
I was wrong, but I do want to get credit for something. I cut it out of the last show, but George, can you validate that I said we'd be playing Canada now that it's been almost formally announced that we're playing them on January 26th?
Yes, Matt did say we were playing Canada, so I can vouch for that. Even though he was wrong about, you know, the game, he was right about that.
Yeah, and I am sorry about that. We can also talk about, I know, Manchester United versus Liverpool this weekend. I don't know if we can put a friendly wager on this for you being a United fan, me being a Liverpool guy. You want to bet something on this?
I mean, I'm not a betting man, but I know Man U's going to win. We're going to go 6 points clear, and there's going to be some tears, and I absolutely love that.
All right, we'll just talk about it next week on the podcast. I think that's what we're going to have to do. I think where Liverpool is going to win, but I'm also not 100% sold on my team. So I guess in terms of U.S. soccer news, we do have some actual stuff we have to cover before getting to Paxton Pomacall. So at this point, we still have no Brian Reynolds answer. Apparently, it's getting close, but Bruges is trying to get back into it. I'm also hearing that Juventus is still leading the race, so we don't know yet. Also, shout out to the Matthews. Obviously, Matthew Olasande had a goal for Rotherham against Everton over the weekend in the FA Cup. And then our boy, Matthew Hoppe, become the first American to score a hat-trick in the Bundesliga. So let's talk about the Matthews first, and then there's some other stuff we can also get to.
Yeah, I think starting off with Matthew Olasande, obviously he's a couple years removed from playing for Manchester United. Didn't quite work out for him there, but it's good to see him playing for a championship team. And he's getting forward and scoring. They play a lot of the times. He plays as a wing back. We saw when he was the youth teams he liked to get forward. So I think the right back pool is just easily the deepest right now for U.S. soccer. It's actually quite incredible. You have Matthew Olasunde scoring against Premier League teams. And you have DeAndre Yedlin, who somehow is now starting every single game for Newcastle. And people are kind of turning a blind eye to it because they'd rather have other people. So it's actually quite incredible what we have going on in that position.
Yeah, I also want to give a quick shout out to Shaq Moore, who's also been balling in the second division of Spain. So there is literally a glutton of right back guys available. It's really pretty crazy. The guys who we leave home in any tournament or any game is going to be nuts. So I think that's definitely a great point to make. In terms of other news that's going on, obviously now we have the finalized transfer of Mark McKenzie to Genk. I think I can speak for both of us and say we are very excited about this move. It's a better move than Celtic, and it's a great development opportunity for him. And I think we're both excited for Mark.
Yeah, Mark McKenzie, I love him as a player. I've gone to talk with him off the field. He's a great guy. So there's literally no one more deserving. And so I really hope this is a great stepping stone for him. Hopefully a good season and a half, maybe two seasons. And then we see him in a top five league. So very excited. He got the number two jersey. He was their third most expensive transfer, I think. So they're high on him. We're high on him. And I'm excited.
Yeah, no, it's really been a good weekend for U.S. soccer. We also have to touch on Andres Pereira filing his one-time switch, the former Colombian youth international, now with the USMNT full-time. FIFA granted that switch. It was suspicious. We thought about it happening for a while. And I talked about it in my article about the most important dual nat. So dual nat Matt out here again, plugging another article he wrote. Same one as last week, but whatever. What are your thoughts on Andres Pereira? For me, I think it's great. You know, another guy who could play a Tyler Adams-style six, could even play as an eight. It's a good prospect.
Yeah, I think anytime a player with two World Cups under the belt decides to switch to the national team, it's incredible. I believe it was Daniel Smith who tweeted out all the great dual national wins that Greg Berhalter has. So we're seeing Greg do some absolutely phenomenal recruiting. Andres Pereira really doesn't have any reason to play for the U.S. national team. Colombia has given him, you know, more than enough assurance that he is part of their plans. He has started two different World Cups at two different age groups for them. So to come into the U.S. pool now, it means that Berhalter really gave him, you know, something that he could work with. And that's incredible. He's coming from a great program there. So really good work by Berhalter and everyone involved. And I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, he's someone I think I'm really excited to see come the friendlies this month, because I think he's going to play now that he officially can. So we're going to see what it actually looks like. And I'm really excited for that. I also want to plug our earlier interview with Matthew Hoppe. It's episode 14, if anyone wants to listen and hear about his journey to Schalke and all things in between. But without further ado, I think we can just start talking to Paxton Pomykal. I mean, I can speak for myself and say this is a really fun interview. I really enjoyed it. Be on the lookout for him this year.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, kind of like I talked about Mark McKenzie, I love interviewing guys born in 99 like me, the guys who, you know, have grown up playing against, you know, watching play. So great to talk to him. And yeah, it was exciting. Starting off, we're really excited to have you on because there's been a lot of stuff going around with U.S. soccer recently. And as someone who's been following you for a long time, I've always wanted to know, I'm like, what is Paxton Pomykal doing right now? You know, I'm seeing this about this guy, that guy. So I'm just excited to kind of get you on and kind of hear about how things have been going.
Yeah, man. Thank you guys for having me. Obviously, it's weird because with the pandemic and everything with COVID, it's like everybody's personal lives are more reserved. And unless you're putting stuff out on social media, there's no access from like any media outlets coming to the locker room or like at practices or any like anything like that. So if you're not on a Zoom meeting, you're not really getting any information from us. So ask away. I'm an open book, so don't worry about me.
All right. Sounds good. I guess my first question is just obviously last year was kind of injury troubles for you. You had the labrum repair and then the correction of like the CAM impingement. I know what a labrum repair is. What is even the second and how's the recovery going for you?
So basically, in non-scientific terms, I had what's known as a hip impingement where I had a little bump on my hip bone. And if you imagine like a ball and socket, the ball moves like that. And if there's a little bump, it can't move as far either way. So I had limited range of motion with my hip moving externally specifically. And so that was what the surgery was for. And then whenever they were in there fixing that, they just went ahead and cleaned up my labrum. So on top of the impingement, there was the labrum repair, but my labrum wasn't really too bad. And we were really happy about that. So they just went in and cleaned it up a little bit. But the main surgery was for the hip impingement. And I'm doing really well. I'm pretty much medically cleared at this point. There's nothing really much more for me to do on the rehab side of it. At this point, it's just volume and getting fit again. And I should be ready to go depending on what time preseason starts. I mean, looking at things, it's probably going to start sometime early February. I should be able to go 100% with no restrictions. So.
Awesome. I'm really glad to hear that. And I'm sorry to focus on all the injuries.
It's justified for sure.
Yeah, so you had the core muscle injury as well last year. Yeah. Have you learned anything different about like your body and kind of how you're taking things differently?
Yeah, I mean, everything that over the past kind of year and a half, 2 years that with my hip impingement and the core muscle repair, which was mainly for my groins, it's all interconnected. So now that I've basically done everything I can and I'm feeling really good, hopefully that my body can take a break from going under the scope or the sutures for a little bit. And I can just get some minutes under my belt. And I feel that way. Like I'm feeling really positive going into this new year, new season. And I'm just eager to get started.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. I just have a quick follow-up. Was it when you were playing, did you ever notice anything like growing up, or was just kind of like, I'm going through the motions, it's not really an issue. Then you got to the professional level and you realized there's like more physicality, or is this just like,
regarding like my groins and stuff. I never had groin pain growing up. And for the first 2 years of, with FC Dallas, I never really experienced any groin pain either. It kind of, after the World Cup, kind of came on a little bit in my groin and lower abdomen, and then kind of progressively got worse. And then obviously now we're here where we are, but no, I would never have like thought growing up that. Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, now we're done with the injury talk. We can move to the fun stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you said you just talked about it, the World Cup, what a tournament that was, you know, kind of capped off a great 2019 for you. And we spoke to Uli Lainez about it, how close that team was. So what was it like to be part of that squad and then also be able to captain the team for some games too?
No, those are my boys. That was a fun tournament, and that was one really close group of guys. I'm sure Uli talked about it, and anybody else you've had on. But there wasn't one guy on the team that was just like an outsider. We were all on the bus interacting with everybody. Like you rarely see guys on the bus with their phones out playing games or whatever, because everybody's just laughing, cracking jokes in the locker room, just having a really good time. So the camaraderie of that team, I think, was one of the main reasons we had a lot of success. And then obviously to be able to put on the armband for those guys and fight for my brothers out there, that's another honor in itself. And then obviously Mark McKenzie, the real captain of that team, just made a massive transfer, and for him to, you know, not necessarily let me wear the band, but also just like have a good attitude about it and just everybody on the same page. And, you know, we probably had 5 or 6 guys on that team that could have been captains of that team. So it was a true honor to be able to you know, play for TAB and in the World Cup, and obviously didn't end exactly how we wanted to, but a successful tournament nonetheless.
Yeah, I can speak to that. I mean, for myself, I think it was really cool just like seeing our guys out there. And I remember the France game, you know, sorry to Michael Cuisance, I believe that's how you pronounce it. But for you, did you come into the tournament like nervous at all? Were you overwhelmed? Were you afraid of like guys who were already established at the professional level?
Well, I mean, I'd like to think I was established at the professional level at that time. I mean, that was my, third season with the FC Dallas. So, I mean, I had a few years under my belt at that level. I mean, it's not quite a top 5 league in Europe, but you know, MLS is progressing in its own way, and we're being more and more competitive. But no, going into the tournament, I didn't really have any nerves, or generally speaking, I don't really get nervous. I don't know. I like to think that once the game starts, all the nerves go away and you just kind of go out and play and you forget everything else that's not on the field. So I've never really been the type to get nervous. I'm just kind of level-headed about everything. And if I play bad, I play bad, and hopefully I play good. But if I play good, then have the same mentality going into the next game.
Have you ever thought about like where that comes from? Is there anyone you modeled your game after? And do you think there is any overlap into your almost confidence and the confidence of growing a mustache?
Yo, that's two really different questions there. First off, you know, I kind of didn't really model my game after one player. I grew up an Arsenal fan. I know it's kind of unfortunate and nowadays, but back in the day, they were actually pretty good. Back in like 2010, 2011, when they really played that passing style of football and possession oriented, and that's kind of the team I kind of modeled my game after. And I really like to be on the ball, to have the ball, and then obviously when we lose it, just get it back as quickly as possible. And I felt like in those early teens of the 20 teens, they really did that really well. And I get the mustache part. I mean, I don't really care, you know, I'm an open book. I don't really care what people think of me. And obviously it was a joke at first. Me and Ryan Hollingshead, obviously you guys know him, the left back on our team. He, on every away trip, he shaves in the hotels. And so I told him when we were in preseason, I was like, yo, I'm going to shave, but I'm keeping the mustache. Why don't you do it with me? And so he's like, oh, I'm there. I'm good. And so we called ourselves the Mustachio Bros. And then I kind of kept it for the beginning of the season. And then I don't know why it took off so much, but everybody loved it. I mean, it's hideous, but I mean, the fans loved it. So it's kind of a running joke now. And I'll probably bring it back whenever we start the season.
Awesome. I'm pro mustache, as you can see. So I like it. I think it's a good look. I think it's like so bad that it's good. So I'm all for
it. All looking forward to it.
That's exactly. It is so bad that it looks good. You know, it's not like I'm doing it for the looks. It's for the fun.
Yeah, like it's such a confidence. And I feel like it's just like, I really have this like thing on my face that looks so bad, but I know it looks bad and therefore it must look good.
Well, come on. I do one of the only things in the world that allows you to keep a mustache and have nobody, you know, fire you when you walk into work. So I'm going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm on a podcast. It's nice for me that no one sees my face.
Yeah, well, just, you know, to wrap up the World Cup talk, you know, you played the youth teams growing up. You've played in tournaments all over the world. I remember you even scored in the final, that tournament in Czech Republic. So you've played in big games, but just what was it, the difference about the atmosphere of the World Cup, whether it was just the players you were around, the team you were with, even just getting off the bus before a game? What was that atmosphere? What was that real difference where you thought to yourself, like, wow, this is a World Cup?
I think the main difference was just like the amount of eyes we had on us and the amount of like support we had from not only the U.S. national team fan base, but also like the higher ups within U.S. soccer, and for them to, you know, make us video messages before games, and for us to be like, well, we got to go out there and compete, and we're on a world stage now. It's not just like a tournament in Czech Republic where if we win, you know, a few people see that on Twitter, or like, this is the big deal, just U20. So it's the next big step to the World Cup. And I mean, that is the biggest tournament of any sports in the entire world. So yeah, there was a lot more eyes on us. And obviously it was that, I love that pressure. And I know the rest of the guys did too. So
yeah. So then you come back from that next month, you know, you're named an all-star, got to play in an all-star game. So kind of, you know, big 2 months. So what was that being like?
No, I was super shocked about that one, to be fair. I didn't really think that I was going to go to that by any means. And then obviously I had the commissioner selection, so shout out. But it was really fun to be able to go there and kind of not necessarily take a break physically, but mentally I got to take a little break and get to enjoy the success I've had so far in the season, and then obviously meet some guys that, you know, I grew up idolizing. And it's weird because when you sign and that's your job, it changes like your mindset. And so even guys I grew up idolizing that were there, it's just like you go out and you eat lunch with Nani and Pozuelo, and it's just super casual, and you can't be really like a fanboy, and you're not anymore because it's your job as well. And there's kids growing up that idolize you the way you did to these guys. So that's kind of how I looked at it.
I'm curious also, like, when it comes to the U20 World Cup or the All-Star game, what was scarier, Diego Costa or Daniel Axel Zagadou?
Oh, like, Zagadou for sure, bro. No chance. I had the band in that game, and so I went up for the coin toss, and I, like, look up, and I'm like, yo, you got to be kidding me. This guy is the biggest soccer player I've ever seen in my life, ever, and played against. And, I mean, he's just, like, in the game doing ridiculous things, like, step overs as a center back and just botting me off the ball. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, Julian has told us that you guys were actually at the hotel, so he saw him walking around too, and he was...
Yeah, no, we stayed at the same hotel as France for the quarterfinals, and so afterwards it was nice because we could be like, yeah, you're right.
Obviously, at that time, you know, All-Star Game, World Cup, this seemed like there was probably some strong European interest. Was that something you did consider before, you know, continuing on FC Dallas for 2020?
Sure. I mean, of course, everything's taken into consideration. I'm a pretty calculated person, so obviously I'm not going to close off any doors until, you know, I'm making my own decisions. So that definitely on the table a little bit, but I knew that deep down I kind of wanted to stay here for a little bit. And then obviously a couple months later, even after that, I had surgery for the core muscle repair. So at that point, it's like you can't really make a transfer when you're coming back from surgery. And then this year, obviously, with COVID and everything and me not being 100%, and now we're a year and a half later. And so that's obviously something that could be a possibility in the future. But right now, in my mind, I'm just focused on playing and getting minutes without having to sit in the stands and with crutches or some scars on my legs and cheering the boys on from my couch while they're going and playing Seattle. You know, I want to be there.
No, that makes plenty of sense. I'm curious also, so Reggie Cannon had this like escalator clause in his contract that like incentivized FC Dallas to make it easier for him to move to Europe sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Did that play impact you at all in your contract decision?
Not necessarily. So Reggie signed his deal after I did, and he definitely wanted to leave, and that was – he wanted to get out earlier than he did even. And since COVID hit and, you know, it just didn't work out in January. So they signed a contract basically incentivizing him to get out, which obviously now looking back, everybody knows that he kind of wanted to get out and leave, and more power to him. You know, Reshi was my roommate for 3 years. So I still talk to him. That's my boy. But, He wanted to make that next step, and he has, and obviously he's doing really well over there now, and I'm really proud of him. But in my contract, there's nothing that says, like, I don't know the exact wording that was in his, but I know it kind of money-wise switched with clubs and whatnot, but there's nothing like that in my contract.
So was Reggie a good roommate? Was he the messy one, or were you the messy one?
No, I mean, he's an awesome roommate. Listen, I love that guy. Like, from the bottom of my heart, he's one of the most genuine people, like, I know. And so we got along really well, and he's not really messy. He's just a funny guy.
Really messy. You didn't think?
No, he's not really messy. I mean, I'm a fairly clean person. My apartment's always clean, but he's clean as well, and not really messy. A little bit, but not really.
So we're supposed to have him on in a couple of weeks. So we'll ask him, and we'll get the official story from both sides, and then we can kind
of. What he's gonna say is, "I talk in my sleep. Just wait." I know.
I know.
Like, yeah, he yells in his sleep.
No, due to the pandemic, I know he was only able to have a small wedding. But were you a part of that in any way?
Yeah, actually, so I wasn't. It's literally like 10 to 12 people that were allowed to go to his wedding, and obviously, like, I'm not going to be 10 to 12 people. He's got family and all that. But after the reception, they were at a cool location, a house on like a lake, and had a cool backdrop and everything. And I got to drive with my family and like make a sign, and we drove by, and they came out in the front yard, and we like said congratulations and whatnot, socially distanced. So there was like probably 20 cars that did that, but that was like my part of the wedding. So yeah, I did go by and say congratulations to Reggie and Kendall, and obviously love them too. Love Kendall, and yeah.
An underrated USMNT power couple for sure. So talking on the field now, you've played as an 8, a 10, even on the wing. Like, where do you think your best position is?
Oh, man. I don't know. Best position's relative, because I have good and bad games at every position, right? It just really depends on the way the scheme is for that game, and tactics and formation and different things like that. But I prefer to be in the middle, I think, just because I'm always involved in the game. On both phases, offense and defense, you can never turn off, and you're always engaged, and there's always an opportunity for you to get the ball regardless where it is on the field. So I generally speaking, I like to play in the middle, but I also like to play on the wing and false nine, even some left back. So that's part of my game, is being versatile, and I know the club really appreciates that in me. And Luchinav spoke about that, and he's really that's something he really likes about me, and that I provide for the team, is that I'm able to fill in slots that they might need for that game, or just the way I'm playing in that specific moment. If they're making subs and you know, they don't have the right subs on the bench, then they can move me to a position that I can fill in, so they can bring another guy in. So just different things like that. But yeah, I don't know. I like to play in the middle, but as long as I'm on the field, listen, soccer is soccer. So I can get on the ball and do my thing. I like to be playing.
I like that attitude. I'm curious. You said left back. So are you officially?
I heard that too, Matt. I wasn't going to say anything, but left back.
Yeah. Are you throwing your name into the ring for the left back position?
No, there was a couple of opportunities this year where we played 5 in the back, and especially when we were going to Orlando to play in that tournament, and I was being looked at heavy to potentially start at left wing back in those games out there. And then obviously we had a little COVID outbreak and then couldn't play in those games. But yeah, that's definitely a choice for Lucci. And if they need me to play out there, I know Johnny had a great end of the year, so now we have two really solid left backs that can play and do well. But at that time, Johnny really hadn't had much experience, which in my opinion, I just throw the guys in. I like that, but they were going to potentially play me out there. So,
all right, we'll see.
Yeah, and I was going to save this question if we had time at the end, but you mentioned MLS is back, so I have to do it. I don't know how much information you can give, but what went down with that plane ride and those Cheez-Its? Because I love I love Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its were getting a bad name. I had to stop buying them for a little bit. So what can you tell us about Cheez-Its?
Were they white cheddar? Was it just regular cheese?
No, it was just regular. I mean, I don't really know exactly the extent of what was said and why that was brought up in the first place. We all flew, and then upon arrival, we had two players test positive right away. And then so that was kind of the start of it. And then, we had like, I don't know, 17, 18 staff and players from that day to the next, like, 11 days test positive. So whether they contracted it on the plane or in the bus or from somewhere else in Dallas, I mean, it's, you never really know. And to blame that on us taking off our mask for 2 seconds to eat Cheez-Its is kind of ridiculous, but it is what it is.
Well, you know, glad we got to clear that up. You heard it here first. So everyone with their Cheez-It theories, calm down. So that's settled.
No, it's not like our hands were all in each other's Cheez-It boxes and throwing Cheez-Its at each other, licking each other's fingers. Like, it, everybody was socially distanced. Everybody wore a mask other than maybe taking a sip of water or having a small snack. And I mean, even then it's like, can you do it? You know what I mean? So we took every precautionary measure we could going into, and we didn't really have any positive cases until we got there. So I think all the guys were doing everything they could. And at the end of the day, it's just like, even the players that tested positive, some of them, like, were, I know for a fact, were being the most careful and getting groceries delivered and not even going out. And a couple of their wives were pregnant, so obviously they didn't want to get it. And then, yeah, so to blame that on all on the players, I mean, it's, it is what it is, but
that's the situation.
We wanted to play in that tournament, so to say that, like, we weren't doing everything we could is, it's fair, because I mean, we had 19, 20 guys test positive, but I just don't feel that way.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, so going back to your origin story, let's call it that, you know, you start off at Dallas Texans. So unlike a lot of guys we see at FC Dallas, you're a local kid from Texas. Yeah. So I actually remember your Dallas Texans team. You guys were number two in the country. I remember because we were in the top 25. So I used to check Top Drawer Soccer all the time. I remember seeing you guys number two, but, you know, it's fine. I'm over it. But so growing up, was it always your goal to play for the FC Dallas, or was it kind of just the logical next step after Texans?
Yeah. Then growing up, it was never like, obviously I was a fan and I went to games as a kid, walked out on the field with a few guys and really enjoyed going to games. But kind of when I turned 11, 12, that at that point in time, I mean, now not so much, FC Dallas has kind of solidified the top spot for sure. But at that point in time, there was kind of somewhat of a competition between FC Dallas and the Texans. And we competed really well against the academy teams at that time. And so they were kind of the rival team. And so obviously I wasn't really like trying to go over there and be all buddy buddies with these guys, cause we were competing against them. But so I never really thought I was going to just switch and go play for FC Dallas and go pro at that point. But, it was definitely the next step, for me. After the U14 year with the Texans, I didn't really like the way the club, like their philosophy, the coaching, some of the selections, and just I was a smaller kid and some of the things that were said to me and my teammates. And I was just like, it's not the type of club I want to be a part of. So I made the switch, and yeah, it started off at FC Dallas, not even starting. And I was with the U15 pre-academy. So at that time, I wasn't even with the 16s with Lucci, and then kind of progressively made my way up the ladder and then became a DP by the end of the year. And then a year later than that, I was signed pro. So 2 years from U15 to pro. So it was a pretty quick kind of progression for me.
Seems like things are working out okay so far.
Yeah, it was a good. Looking back, I don't think I'm going to ever regret that move switching to FC Dallas. So.
And I know just touching on it quickly too, I know your dad was your coach all the time growing up. Obviously, brothers are involved in soccer as well. So what was it like just having your full family love the game and being around it for you?
Yeah, my dad was actually my coach from like U5 to U11. So he coached a few different teams. And we kind of fed into the Texans, but we weren't associated technically with the Texans. All the players just kind of went there afterward. And he played in college. And then obviously my older brother played in college at Columbia in New York. And then my little brother's a senior and he plays for FC Dallas Premier Team and also in high school. And I think he'll probably go on to play in college. So growing up in a soccer family, it's definitely kind of what fueled my passion for the game. And having my older brother around, three years older than me, to kind of always play against and get bullied and, you know, learn how to play with an older guy, and that kind of around the house, kicking it against the couch, broken blinds growing up, you know, getting yelled at. That was the best part of my childhood. So
Yeah, speaking about around the house, you know, during the early days of quarantine, we all saw that Blinding Lights video.
Yeah.
How come there hasn't been a follow-up? I thought we were going to get like this little...
Like a TikTok side of Paxton? No, I'm not big into TikTok. I mean, I love TikTok, don't get me wrong. It's hilarious, but I just can't justify making all these dances and stuff like that. But with my brother's home, it was a fun little thing we did, and maybe when they're all home again, maybe we'll do something. But
all right, we'll see. Well, don't close the book. You never know.
Yeah, I never say never, but it's highly unlikely.
All right, well, we'll see. I'm curious also, you know, you've been part of the FC Dallas system for a while. There was Wes at Juve, Chris at Bayern, yourself, legit prospect, Brian Reynolds, Tanner Tessman, Justin Che, Thomas Roberts. The list goes on and on. So What do you think, like, makes the FC Dallas system so successful?
I think philosophy is a big part of it. And that kind of started back with Oscar when he came in, and just kind of the integration between the academy and the first team not being too far away and not so far-fetched. We trained at the same time, one field over. We were a hallway over in the locker room. So to have that kind of connection to the first team really was a draw for a lot of guys out of town. I mean, if you look at 5-6 of those guys that you named, they're from Alabama, Arkansas, different places that don't have, a first team to go play for their academy. So everybody wants to play for the best, and for a long time. I mean, I don't necessarily know how the academy is doing right now, just with COVID, and I don't know if they even played games in the fall. So, but for a very long time, we're the best. So obviously, when you're the best, you attract top talents around the country, and especially in the South, you don't have a professional team, then you're not tied to any like zoning rights, and they can go wherever they want. And so most of them come to FC Dallas. So.
Yeah. I mean, you look at all these guys that are coming into the team. You've been the first team for a while with Michael Barrios being traded today. You're now the third longest tenured guy behind Matt and Ryan Hollingshead. So it's kind of all come so fast. So obviously you have leadership experience.
Tell me that's not wild though. I'm the third longest player on the team. I just turned 21 a month ago. That's wild.
That's what I'm saying. You just turned 21. You have all these guys around you who are probably looking up to you. You know, our birthdays are actually 5 days apart. I turned 21 5 days after you. I'm a Capricorn, though. Just throwing.
Happy birthday, brother. Thank you. I'm belated.
So you have all these guys looking up to you. You're pretty young yourself. Just what's that experience like being a young veteran?
Yeah, I think, like I said a lot with last year being the way it was, I wasn't really a part of the locker room too much. But I think this year I really need to take on that role. And this is my fifth year with the club, with the team. I'm not fifth year with the club, like seventh year with the club, but fifth year as a pro with the team. And obviously I'm the third longest player now. So I know everybody around the club. I know the way we want to do things. I know the coaching staff. I know most of the guys on the team. I know all the academy coaches, all the front office people. So I think that's a role I need to step into this year and really embrace that and kind of be the bridge between the older guys and the younger guys and be able to kind of be the voice of reason between the two and kind of be the glue in the locker room this year. And that's something I'm looking forward to doing.
You got to grow the mustache. It's more maturity, you know, that's what
maturity and authority. You listen to the guy with the mustache. Ryan Holling said, like you said, he's got one going. He's number two. Matt Hedges, obviously, you got to get in there.
I'm telling you, when soccer comes around, the mustache will be back. Don't worry. Oh.
I want to see the goal celebration, like a nice like little twist like that. Yeah, like that.
Right there. Don't worry about it.
I like that. Perfect. So I'm curious also, obviously health comes first, but there's a lot of stuff coming up for U.S. soccer. There's Nation League, World Cup qualifying, Olympics, Gold Cup in the summer. Is there any like specific event you're looking at saying, I want to be there?
I think the Olympics. I think that would be really cool. And I'm an American, so I grew up loving the Olympics, obviously. And so to be able to go to that would be awesome. But first and foremost, I got to play. Like, we got hundreds of players eligible to go to that tournament and guys playing at a really high level. It's not just like a U17 World Cup or a U20 World Cup where some guys are still in the academy and stuff. Like, now we're all pros at this point. So if you're not playing, you're not going to go. And so I need to get back playing. And that's something that's a goal of mine I'm looking forward to. But the tournaments before and the camps before, I mean, if I go, I go, but I'm not actively looking towards those. I mean, my number one priority right now is with FC Dallas at the club level.
Yeah, that makes sense. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, obviously, you know, you have this kind of blank canvas now. It's 2020 or 2021 rather. You know, how are you looking forward to it? Because a lot of guys, you know, get injured and then they have to miss maybe the first month or first 2 months of the season, but you're going in fresh now. You kind of have this canvas. So how exciting is that just to know that you have a fresh start right from the beginning?
Yeah, no, the timing actually worked out really well. From when I had surgery to now, I'm about 4.5 months out of technically a 6 month timeline to back to playing. But it looks like at five, I'll be able to pretty much train, and I'm already sprinting, cutting, striking, passing. I'm medically cleared. It's just at this point, there's no teams training or anything like that. So I'm out there on my own, just doing it with our physical coach and some of the athletic trainers. And it's nice. I'm looking forward to getting a nice base in preseason and get my legs ready to go for the entire season. And last year, I didn't really get to do that. I was out for like a month and a half of preseason, and I started late, and then you don't have that base that everybody else has, and you're always trying to play catch up. And I'm really happy that this year I'll be able to kind of have a full preseason.
We're looking for a big year for you, so we're excited, definitely. We have two little fun questions. So our first one we always ask is, what's like your go-to song on your pregame playlist?
Another One Bites the Dust.
Okay. I mean, always.
Go ahead. We actually, all the players at home have a goal celebration song. And so whenever we score, whoever scores, they'll play over the like speaker whatever song we chose for that specific year. And so mine is Another One Bites the Dust. I listen to it before every game.
That's a pretty good one. I like that. And then also another question we'd like to ask is, in 5 years from now, where's Paxton Pomacall? Like, what do you think it's going to be for you?
Yeah, I can't answer that for you guys. I'm sorry. I live in the moment. I'm a real present guy. I'm day to day. I don't really like to look too far in the past or the future. So I wish I could tell you that. I will be playing soccer in 5 years, hopefully. So if you guys can take that, that's my answer.
All right. So I guess in 5 years, we'll have you come back on, and then we can talk again. How about
that? We'll see in 5 years where I'm at, and then I'll come back on and give you guys the little rundown. So
perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
You said you like to live the moment, but I do have a slight question about your past. I have family in Texas, so, you know, I've been to Texas a lot.
As long as it's about Texas, I'm all about talking about Texas.
So that's what I want to know. Where would you rather score a 90th minute winner, Ross Stewart or Blue Sky?
Oh, that's funny. That's a tough one. See, I grew up playing at both. When I was younger, we played at Blue Sky, and then obviously I trained every day at Ross Stewart with the Texans. So with FC Dallas, probably in the academy, if I scored a 90-minute banger at Ross Stewart, that would have been a little bit more of a peach rather than when I was 11 years old playing indoor. Please.
Yeah, I love going to both. You know, my little cousins play there now. They live in Fort Worth. So, you know, I had to know from a Texas guy himself, you know, which one feels
That's right. Impressive. I love that you know those two places.
I'm curious for myself, though. Are you a Cowboys fan?
Oh, of course. That's Cowboys, Mavs. Yeah, it's okay. We'll be back next year.
I'm a Giants fan for football, so we can. It's good. We're done with questions, so that's we can just leave it at
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we can leave it at that. There was there would have been some tension over going on in this interview, so I'm glad that you said that at the end. So annoying.
No, like we said, like, you know, you're one of the guys who, you know, I've known for a long time. So just having this opportunity to kind of talk to you, you know, sounds like you're ready for 2021. So, you know, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no, thanks guys for having me. I'm glad I could fit you into my not busy schedule doing nothing here in Dallas. So thanks for asking me to take a little bit of my day. I enjoyed it.
Well, we appreciate it. Well, best of luck this season, and hopefully we'll see you on the field soon. All right, and that'll wrap up this edition of the One Goal US Soccer Podcast. I do want to shout out our most recent 5-star review from Bobby. So thank you, Bobby. I hope you got a jacket. You stopped in the cold to write a review, so we appreciate that. But also want to give a quick shout out to Paxton Pomacall and FC Dallas for setting up the interview. I really had a great time. And George, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Yeah, he's hungry. Like we mentioned in the interview, He's coming back at a perfect time, right as the season's starting. He's somebody who I think, you know, I haven't seen a lot of depth charts recently, and I think he should firmly be in there. So I'm excited to see what he can do this season on the field.
Yeah, man. Keep an eye out for Paxton Pomacall. And everyone, don't forget to rate, review. We'll be back this time next week. But keep your eyes and ears peeled. We got some good interviews coming up. So not just Paxton Pomacall, who was a great interview, but many more on the way as well. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back this time next week.